WCNO Palm City.
Welcome to the Mindy Molina Show. I'm Mindy Molina, investment advisor representative, licensed insurance agent, and fiduciary. This is a live show, and I'll be here to take your calls at 772-221-1100 with any of your financial concerns. Again, that's 772-221-1100. Good afternoon, friends. This is Mindy Molina, and you're listening to the Mindy Molina Show here on WCNO 89.9 FM. And we're here every Wednesday, 4 to 5 p.m., talking about everything financial, really trying to educate you and give you as much insight and knowledge that I can in order to either inspire you or encourage you or teach you that financial planning is just so crucial and so important. And taking action is where it starts. If you have any questions or any comments, or you just want to contribute to this conversation, please, by all means, I'd love to hear from you. Today, what I'm going to be talking about is weathering the storm, and kind of using that as an analogy between market cycles and weathering a storm. So if as we kind of delve into this intriguing analogy that draws parallels between weathering a storm and navigating cycles of the market, just like a storm can disrupt our lives, market fluctuations can also challenge our financial stability and decision making. So understanding how to prepare and how to navigate is and focus on longevity, it's going to help us emerge stronger and more resilient. And using the analogy of the storms, I think, is a good parallel simply because we're more familiar with that. We have hurricanes, typhoons, cyclones, the hurricane, tornadoes. So here in Florida, we talk about hurricanes, but I grew up in Indiana and we had a lot of tornadoes. So the tornado was the dreaded disaster that could happen. And what do you do during a tornado? You got to get in the basement, get below ground. So everyone wanted to have a basement simply for the fact of protection. God forbid there was a tornado. And I have experienced some tornadoes, and I remember being in the basement as a kid and hearing the roaring sounds of the wind and the electricity being out. And I remember one time, I don't know, I was probably 8, 9 years old, and my uncle and my cousins were in town, and my mom and dad and my grandma, and we were all down, and it wasn't even what we would call a basement. It was a cellar. So we were down there with this big crate of potatoes that had been dug up from the garden. And if any of you grew up on a farm like I did, you'll know what I'm talking about. But part of preparing for the winter and harvesting from your garden, everybody has a garden up there and you grow a lot of your own vegetables. And we had this big crate of potatoes, and it's that smell, that musky smell down in that dark cellar, and all of the jarred green beans and tomatoes and the stuff that my mom and my grandmother canned. Right. So we were all huddled up in this cellar and with a candle, and my uncle is reading from the word, reading the Bible, and this storm is above us just howling. And it is very scary. And as a little kid, it was very, very scary. And weathering those storms are no joke. And we probably all have some memory of a time when we had to embrace the weather. And the weather here, we're fortunate, we get a lot of sun and it's beautiful, and it might be storming and raining one second, and the next thing you know, the sun is shining and you're ready to go to the beach. But weathering the storm is emotional. It can be very emotional. And weathering the market can be the same kind of emotional turmoil, a lot of fear. And there's kind of an emotional cycle that you go through. So tornadoes, hurricanes, thunderstorms, you know, some people love thunderstorms, love the lightning. I love it if I'm sitting in the house and I can hear it, you know, outside. But when I'm walking through a parking lot, I don't care for it so much. One time it's storming and I get a call from the school. It's like in the middle of the day, this awful thunderstorm is howling outside, and my son left his lunchbox in the car. So it's like of all the moments that I have to take him this lunchbox, I know I got to cross that parking lot with this lunchbox in the rain and storm and lightning, but a mom has to do what a mom has to do. So I had to weather the storm and get him his food. Floods, ice storms, droughts, you know, surviving droughts and dust storms out west, or tropical storms, any winter storms. For those of you that have ever been, that lived up north, you know what a winter storm is like. I certainly do. I remember snow days, right? We love those and get snowed in as a kid. That's the greatest thing that can happen. But when before I was born in the late 70s, there was really, really bad snowstorms from Indiana, where I'm from. And it destroyed our family farm. My parents had a dairy farm, and a lot of the cows froze because they weren't prepared for that. And this was a huge, what became a financial crisis for them and my grandmother. So my grandfather had passed away, and now my mom and dad and them and my grandmother were trying to carry on the dairy farm. And but because of those blizzards, as they say, and those winter storms, they weren't able to. And that was the end of it. And they had to get into other things. But that was a really, really tragic event. So weather this parallel, I'm talking about weather. I'm going to be talking about the market, but just drawing parallels to the importance of being prepared for these disastrous moments in weather, being prepared for disastrous moments in the market, and how that's going to impact you so that you don't end up like my parents, for example, and lose everything that you've worked for and have to start over in that regard. And it can happen. So that's the parallel we are. So if we think about these storms, while I'm talking about the weather aspect of it, here's some of those big storms that just to remind you of, because sometimes when we haven't had a major catastrophic event, it's easy for us to forget that they even exist. So this is a little reminder of some of those those storms, weathering storms that you might remember, like Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Remember that? It was one of the deadliest hurricanes in U.S. history, and it struck the Gulf Coast, New Orleans, over 1,800 fatalities. Crazy amounts of damage, $125 billion worth of damage, one storm, right? Hurricane Sandy, that was impacted the Caribbean and the eastern United States. Significant flooding, damage, really bad in New Jersey and in New York. A lot of you probably were affected by that, actually, that are listening. I know I have friends that were, and deaths of over 200 people. And damages of $70 billion. So many homes just swept away in one storm. Just in one storm. And let's see, what else? Here's Hurricane Maria. Remember that? Struck Puerto Rico. I was part of a, committee or a group of people that rescued dogs, and they flew the dogs in from Puerto Rico, and we were there to retrieve them and get them fed and nourished, because a lot of them were left in the streets with no food. A lot of the evacuees had to leave the pets behind. So there was just so many animals outside of just people that were affected, but animals are affected too, right? So during Hurricane Maria, also huge humanitarian crisis, just one storm, $90 billion worth of damage. And so these storms, it's just really kind of a reminder, right, that these things have an impact. And there is an impact also on the market side of that. So if we're drawing these parallels between weathering the storm of physical storms and then weathering the market, these are just some reminders. Now, so let's talk about financial disasters, right? What are some financial disasters? Obviously, a market crash, sudden and severe declines in the stock prices that are often triggered by economic instability or investor panic or unexpected news that it's lead to significant financial losses that affect people. Now, when we think of a market loss, a lot of you are not actually taking distributions or making withdrawals or taking money from your investment accounts right now because you're still working. And so you say to yourself, well, it's just a paper loss. It'll come back. Or maybe now's a great opportunity for you to buy more, buy in. But once you're retired, for those of you that are retired, we no longer are in that safe zone of what we call a paper loss. Now we're in this area in life where we have to take distributions. For many of us who have IRAs, we're forced to sell off positions in a down market. And we're forced to take those distributions, so through required minimum distributions. So it's important to understand that it's not always going to just come back. because you might be in that position where you are impacted by it. And then you've heard me talk before on my show about sequence of returns and how impactful those can be in really just destroying a retirement plan, and could be the very reason that you run out of money in retirement and in years where you can't go back to work. So recessions, another could be what we call a financial storm, right? Periods of economic decline, characterized by reduced consumer spending, business investment, and rising unemployment, often resulting in widespread financial hardship. These words all sound familiar. We've been encountering some of those topics. A recession can affect your overall financial freedom, your financial future. It can affect whether or not you're able to retire when you want to, and obviously whether or not you run out of money in retirement. And the big aim here is to never run out of money. So there's two goals. One is that we don't run out of money in retirement, in hopes that we are able to retire one day. So don't want to run out of money. And the other thing is, in the interim, when you're working, you need to be investing with the goal of retirement. So your investments need to have an actual target in mind of why are we investing? What are we trying to accomplish? I know just make more money. Yeah, I'm all about that. Yes, let's make the most money that we can possibly make, and then let's protect it. That is the Mindy mantra. I love that. However, I want you to have a vision of what it is that you're trying to accomplish and for you to know when you get there, right? So if you're building a house, for example, you want to know, when do I get to move into it? You want to know when you are done. And yeah, of course, once you move into the house, you're still going to be doing things and improving your home. But what's the point to just continue building if you never have a date of being able to move in? It's the same thing with your investments. We want to know what it is you're trying to build. And at what point are you going to be able to take advantage of it? Actually enjoy it. Enjoy what you've built, financially speaking. So some other things. Bank failures can occur when financial institutions become insolvent due to poor management, maybe excessive risk-taking, or economic downturns, leading to the loss of deposits and financial instability. So bank failures. I've personally worked with clients who were not able to go and retrieve their assets, their money from CDs, because during the financial crisis in 2008, that they had to wait for the FDIC to come through for them. So these can be impactful. And if that was a moment when they needed that money for whether it be to buy groceries, pay bills, monthly income, medical reasons, buy prescriptions, they wouldn't have been able to. So the impact can be real. It doesn't always happen. You know, we don't always get struck by some crazy disastrous storm. We're able to dodge them, but some people do, you know, like we'll think about Dorian and how much we were worried that was going to hit Florida, but what it didn't. But look what it did to the people in the Bahamas. It was so awful. So dodging these storms is a big deal, but the financial storms can hit us too. Housing market, right? Crashes, significant declines in real estate. We probably all lived through that back in 2008. Excessive speculation, rising interest rates, economic downturns leading to foreclosures and financial losses. Interest rates are a big driving factor in that too. You know, interest rates get high enough, people can't afford, especially if they have an adjustable rate and weren't able to lock in when interest rates were significantly low. The cost of homeowners insurance going up, their escrows, taxes, plus the interest, it just adds up and people can end up in foreclosure, especially with inflation taking that impact. So we know that a housing market crash is always a possibility. Ponzi schemes and fraud. Look at how many people got caught up in the Bernie Madoff story and hit Palm Beach Island of some of the most intelligent, successful people, you know, that have accrued so much wealth, but yet ended up in this Ponzi scheme, this fraud, And so it can happen to anyone. That's my point. You don't have to just be an elderly senior who's been taken advantage of by some scam. This can happen to highly intellectuals and successful people as well. So currency crisis, which is rapid devaluation of a nation's currency, which is often triggered by economic instability, leading to inflation, loss of confidence, and capital flight. Currency crisis is something that's a possibility of a financial disaster. Corporate bankruptcies, those occur when companies fail to meet their financial obligations, debt, leading to liquidation or restructuring, which result in job losses and economic disruption, stock prices. So, you know, the loss of a job, there's been story after story of people who didn't see it coming, and, you know, they get a email or a fax, and next thing you know, they're going home and they don't have a job. My mom, come to think of it, was driving to work, and this was during the 08 crisis, okay? This was before, this was probably in, 2007, we'll say. She's late for work, right? We've all been part of the hustle bustle. You're trying to get to work on time. You're running late. You're stressed. You're having anxiety, probably speeding. And so my mom is in this frantic rush to get to work. She arrives at her workplace only to find out that there had been a fax. This is back when people still faxed, that came across saying for them to pack up their stuff and leave. And for the only person to stay was the manager, that the office was closing. And that was it. So she probably put her life in danger to get to work that day, only to be turned to go home, and didn't have a job after that. These things can happen. Do you think that had a financial impact on her? Of course it did. This was a really serious storm that came out of nowhere for her. And it happens to people. So these things, again, why am I drawing all these parallels? Because how do we prepare? How do we be prepared for these storms, these elements in the world that we don't have control over? And the best way is that I can tell you is the same way that you prepare for weather, the same way that you prepare for bad weather, is the same way that you prepare for bad financial, storms as well. So let's talk about some bad, just like we talked about storms, let me remind you of some of these financial crises that have taken place. And just to be a reminder to you, again, sometimes when things have been really good, we forget that bad even has ever existed. And so some of these will be a reminder that it is possible and it can happen. And will it happen again in your lifetime? That's a question that only you get to answer, because no one knows for sure. But depending on how old you are, I think for me, I certainly believe so. Do I believe that Mindy will experience another financial crisis in my lifetime? 100%. I believe that. I hope I'm wrong, but yeah. So let's say the Great Depression. That's the big one. That's a stock market crash of October 1929. And some of you, how old would you be? I think I know one person, a listener, that was it? I'm gonna have to do the math. If you were, well, it's 2024. Goodness, Mindy, you'd have to be over 100, right? 1929. So maybe we have a listener that was there. If there is a listener that was alive during the Great Depression in October, you'd have to be 105. Give us a call, 772-221-1100. 772-221-1100. There was Black Monday, 1987. October 19th, 1987, the stock markets around the world crashed, and with the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropping over 22% in one day. So there's the dot-com bubble that burst in 2000 to 2002. I remember this one. This was my first experience of a market crash. I was graduating college, looking for a job, and guess what? All the people like me were the ones getting laid off first. So I was struggling to find all my dreams of these corporate jobs that I thought I was going to get weren't available because there was so much distress in the financial world. So after soaring stock prices in the late 1990s, the technology sector experienced a massive crash in 2000, leading to the loss of trillions in market value. Many internet-based companies went bankrupt, and the NASDAQ index fell by about 78% from its peak. That is a big fall, 78% from its peak. So imagine what that must have felt like. So I have a story about that as well. So another family member, he and his partner had all of their money saved, super, super wealthy, had all of their money in the market. One retired, got out of the stock market, said, I'm done, I'm cashing in, and I'm going to go enjoy my life. And he did. He took off skiing. The other stayed in, thought that's a crazy notion, and experienced this, right? This dot-com bubble burst. And he was not able to retire and has always knew that one person made the right move, one didn't. So that sometimes it's better to just take the money and run, right? The other is the financial crisis of 2000 and 2008, which is actually right at the time when I got my insurance license. And I was meeting with people, talking to them about Medicare and long-term care and life insurance and reviewing their current policies. And when I would visit with them, all they were doing is, you know, putting their financial statements out, scared, losing 40% of their savings, their life savings at, you know, 75 years old, not knowing if it was going to come back. There was just so much stress and so much anxiety during that time for retirees. It was really, really sad. It really was. And it did have stress and these emotional stress has such an impact on your physical body too. You know, stress is unhealthy. And when you're going through this financial storm, like the global financial crisis of 2000, 2008, it has an impact on you. Whether you just wait and let it come back or not, watching it drop has an impact. And we're going to go over those emotions as well. So, and we'll say the Asian financial crisis in 1997, one of the last ones, may or may not remember that. The crisis began in Thailand, and it rapidly spread to other Asian markets, leading to steep declines in stock prices and currency devaluations across the region, significantly impacting global markets. And we obviously felt that here in the United States as well. But the important thing is remembering that there's always the threat, that the threat exists. And when you have a threat that is, like, for example, a storm, we have homeowners insurance. Why? Because if a hurricane comes or a tornado comes or a house fire or a flood, something destroys our house or damages it, we have the insurance for protection. If we didn't have insurance, maybe nothing will ever happen and we'll be fine. But if something does happen and we have insurance, that is our plan, right? That is our protection. That is how we are being prepared, is that, God forbid something like that happens, we have a way to recover. And with a financial plan, okay, so you have your financial house that houses all of your assets and your life savings and everything that you need to make it through the rest of your life. How do you protect that from some of these financial storms that I've been talking about? Well, maybe insurance is the answer for that as well. There are ways. Insurance is an amazing thing that can also protect your finances, okay? So maybe that's the plan. Or maybe it is a waited out plan, saying we are not going to touch this. We don't have to touch this money in order to survive. So we can wait it out. We can allow it to recover, even if it takes, you know, 5 to 10 years. We have that time. Time could be your plan. But if you don't have time and you're planning on retiring, then it's good to have some sort of plan in place that is going to protect your financial house from any of these financial disasters that are a threat to it. One of the big things is being prepared, right? Preparation. And how do I think that you should prepare? Number one is having a plan. Okay, Mindy, well, what does that mean? That's very vague. That means sitting down, laying out all the pieces of your financial puzzle, everything from checking, savings, income, projected retirement dates, what's your Social Security going to be at this age, how much life insurance do you have, what do you have in your 401k, your IRAs, your Roth IRAs, SEP IRAs, what do you have in a pension, what do you have, all of taking every single little detail of your overall financial household and then using that information to create a scenario of if this were to happen, this is the result. Okay. So if there's a market decline, would you run out of money if you were spending this much every month? What are your expenses? The detail of your expenses. My process works like this. Number one, gather all the information, everything from income, assets, taxes, insurances, expenses. The expenses are really important as well. And then having, you know, hedging that against inflation, creating the plans, which I use a really, really detailed software that really keeps everything organized and helps us calculate all of these calculations, just tons and tons of calculations on how it's going to play out, how it's going to affect you, and so that we can project into the future where you're going to end up, and we can run all these simulations of market crises and how they affect you. And when we get to 100% success, we know we don't have to worry about these financial storms anymore. And that's what a plan is. So we fine-tune it until we get the perfect plan that is going to eliminate these risks or chances of failure, really. And maybe we can get down to three or four options where you can choose. But the reality of it is, once you have that knowledge of an actual plan and then you implement that plan, that's what gives you peace of mind. That's when you're prepared. But when you're just investing, to say you're investing, you don't really have a plan. I mean, the plan is to make more money, right? But when I say, do you have a plan? What I'm talking about is, do you have a plan to protect the money that you make? Yeah, let's make more money. But how are we going to protect it? Because the threats are out there. And I personally do not like the idea of, well, it's okay if my account value drops by 40%. It'll come back. Okay, well, you're right. And that's how a lot of advisors go about it. I personally don't like that plan. What I like is, hey, when the market is going to crash, can I just step aside, let it fall? And then, by the way, when the market comes back, I'd like to get in, right? And then when the market is, instead of recovery, I am in growth mode. I am actually increasing my overall value. That's taking full advantage of a storm. A financial storm is also called a huge opportunity. And people, because of their lack of planning, and I guess maybe they've just been told for so long that, oh, you can't time the market. Okay, well, that's basically that's a cop-out for an advisor of saying, hey, we're not even going to try. We're just going to ride it out. I don't like that. I want to at least try to avoid these financial huge drawdowns. Why? So that when they come back, we get to take full advantage of it. But if all we're doing is recovering our assets, then we're not taking full advantage of it. It's taking advantage of us. So that's my thought. So there's other things. So once we get the plan in place, right, that's number one. Have a financial plan to protect your household of assets, your financial household, from these possible crises, financial crises, storms. And then the other thing is, just within that plan, using diversification, right? Making sure you have an emergency fund. Emergency funds are so important. And it's crazy. Lately, I've been having a lot of questions around Roth IRAs for young people. And this is kind of like a little sidebar. But a Roth IRA should not be your emergency fund, okay? So if you have someone that's just getting started to saving money, I don't know if this is coming from TikToks or Reels that they're watching, but it's like I've noticed this theme with people in their early 20s thinking, well, I need to have a Roth. A Roth is a wonderful tool, okay? But if you're saving money that when you get out of college and you might need to buy a car or put a down payment on a home, or you might want to, you know, invest in a property or a business to get your life started, then you don't want to be saving money in a Roth IRA for that. You need an emergency fund, and you need a fund that is non-qualified. A Roth is a piece of it, but I don't think it's necessarily the first thing that you need. You have to have an emergency fund. Okay, so an emergency fund needs to be liquid, and you shouldn't get penalized when you need to take money from it. Because in the event of an emergency, whether it's a catastrophic financial crisis or, you know, you just need to buy a new radiator for your car, you need to have liquidity. Liquidity is really important for emergencies. So the other thing is, and another sidebar, all of my investments, I really strive and really promote being liquid. I want you to be financially liquid so that in the event of one of these crises, why is that important? Because when you're in the stock market, we want to be able to liquidate and move to cash when there's market turmoil. We don't want to be stuck in something and now we can't liquidate. We just have to, we're forced to ride it out, as they say. And what does that mean? That means it just robbed us of an opportunity to take advantage of when the stocks are, when they, some of these valuations are super low. These are great opportunities. But if you can't liquidate and then wait it out and then buy in when it reaches the bottom, you're missing an opportunity. So liquidity is really important, even when you're invested. Insurance is crucial. There's a reason why I'm dually licensed. It's
catch it whenever I can in the afternoons here.
Thanks for listening.
You always said, yeah, of course, it's great. I love it. I do exactly what you say there, been doing it. But I had a question about housing, paying off your house versus exhausting your bank account. I mean exhausting. I mean, there'll still be some left. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, well, yeah, I have an open mind to it, okay? Now, in a situation like this, I couldn't tell you, oh, definitely do it or don't do it, because the question I would have is, how is it going to impact you one way or the other? So it's the wonderful thing about financial planning is that it is math-based. So we could literally project, okay, if you take the money out of your account that is earning XYZ, then and pay off this mortgage that is costing you XYZ, how does it play out in the future? 10 years from now, did you make money or did it cost you more money? You know, it depends on the interest rate, depends on where you are at in your mortgage. You know, perhaps you've already paid off the majority of the interest and now you're just on the principal. Depends on, you know, your investment, your cash. Is it earning nothing? Is it earning 5% in the money market? What is happening with your cash? So it's very, very math based. And I have had circumstances where it did not make sense to pay off the mortgage. And I have had circumstances where it absolutely made sense. And then there's the math based. And there's one other part to this is the emotional side. Okay. People in retirement, especially, there's a lot to be said for peace of mind. If you are in retirement and it bothers you that you have a mortgage or that you have debt, and you could just sleep better at night and not have that stress, or maybe it causes, you know, controversy between your spouse. There's an emotional side effect of having a mortgage or not having a mortgage. I have had a circumstance where the man, even though financially the math said, hey, keep the mortgage, you end out a little bit better. He said, absolutely not. I don't care. I want it gone. Good.
How about I give you like a scenario that I have?
Okay. I'll do my best.
Money. Yeah, no, that's okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I had a mortgage, 08 came around. I had to refinance. I take some money out. And the mortgage kind of doubled the amount. And I'm saying doubled. It really wasn't that much. The property, I had, I think, about 146 debt on it. It's probably worth about 400 or so.
Okay, so you got a lot of equity.
Money sitting around in CD, not a CD, yeah, in the money market, you know, making 5%. It really wasn't that much.
Mm-hmm.
But I exhausted two of those and paid majority of that debt down back to where I was at with square one.
Yeah.
At 80,000. So I have about 80,000 left, but I have about 50, 60, 70 I could pay off on the house.
Well, where does that leave you with liquidity? Would you have an emergency fund? Do you have money?
I will have an emergency fund probably of about, I've got to do the math again, 8,000 or so. And, but I'm at 61 years old.
Right.
So I'm coming up on retirement, which our retirement's okay. We both have two steady government jobs, but you know how that goes.
Yeah. What that about pension, retirement funds?
Which there is a pension for both of us. Mine's going to be very small. I would say about 800,000 or so. We have some 401s and Roth, but they're not, huge, or maybe 100 or so.
Yeah.
And then we're actually putting money into Roth's 403Bs and all that fun stuff.
Right.
As we're working now, which I guess, you know, maybe there's 20 apiece in those. We have a little bit.
I have a question.
At the end, we'll have the debt out of our hair.
Right. So when do you expect to retire? How many more years?
Me, I'll probably work till I'm 80 because I kind of enjoy it.
Yes.
I like to keep busy.
Yep. I appreciate that. So where did the money, I have a question for you. This money that you've accumulated in the bank, I'm assuming, that wasn't from retirement savings through work. Like that's not like an IRA or something you created.
No, that was.
Where did this money come from?
With the steady money I would, you know, have from working for the government, I also have a contractor. So I've done a lot of side jobs in the last 10 years or so.
Yeah.
And that's where that cash came from.
Are you going to continue doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually had one pop up recently, so it's going to replenish itself.
That's the answer I was looking for. Yeah. And here's my thought, okay? I don't, and this is just being, you know, do not, what do you say, take this to the bank? Like, this is just
no,
us.
No,
having, obviously, I don't have 100% of the information, so you're not getting an A-plus answer here. but I can give you one if we go through the process and I get 100% of the information and I run the calculations, I can tell you exactly. But just here, just in this brief conversation that you and I are having, here's one thing, one thought that comes to mind is, if this money can continue to be replenished and like you're going to keep getting these lump sums of money that you can use toward paying off your mortgage, I highly support that. However, I don't think that you should drain yourself down to like $10,000. I think you should be $25,000 to $50,000 liquid, because God forbid, you just don't know what could happen. And if something bad's going to happen, I promise you, it'll be between you only having $10,000 in the bank and you getting another job with another lump sum of money, right? Like the timing will always. So we solve for worst case scenario. And the worst case scenario is, hey, I'm going to drain this, but don't worry, it'll come back. And then you get caught in the middle. And I don't want that to happen to you. And there's no rush for you to just pay off this mortgage. I think you should do it in increments. And I think you should have a good conversation with your wife. You're married, right? You both work in government, you said?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think you should have a conversation and say, what makes sense for us? Like, where is our stopping point? Because there's that emergency fund safety net that I think you need to have. And then everything above that, you can use to pay off your mortgage. Pay down your mortgage. Gotcha. And if you only do it 10 to 20,000 at a time, hey, it's 10 to 20,000 at a time. It's still going to end up going away.
Gotcha. And that's what I've done over the last 6 months with those other chunks I had, was pay it down. And it felt really good.
It does feel good. I know.
It's when you're seeing that the principal is more than the interest on your statement.
It does feel good, yeah. And you know, the other thing is, the interest rate on your loan and what interest you're paying every year versus how much interest that 5% is paying you every year. You know, you might actually be coming out ahead a few thousand dollars every year, but
not really.
Then
I had approached places.
Well, I think. Sorry, go ahead. I keep cutting you off.
And they're both about the same. I'm making 5%. The mortgage is 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's going nowhere.
Well, that emotional win, though, of paying it off is really, and it does give you more peace of mind when you think about your future, your financial freedom. There's a lot to be said for not having debt. You know, it feels good, and it allows you to save way faster. But I would not let that emotion get the best of you, and you end up putting yourself in a situation where now you have to take out another mortgage or dip into your IRA and pay penalties or fees. Just don't put yourself in that kind of position, because it's not necessary, and it's giving you risk. It's too much risk. So make sure you have a substantial nest egg, or not nest egg because you have that, but emergency fund. See, I like to allocate in a very general form. You have your expense account, which money comes in, money goes out, money comes in, money goes out. You're checking, it pays, your income comes in, your bills are paid. Then you have your emergency fund, which is liquid money that is just there as a safety net. And then, did I lose you? And then the other is your nest egg. That's your all of your savings, your retirement savings that needs to be working and making money. It's like your third job. So
yeah, which we have that in place.
Yeah, it sounds like you're doing amazing. And if you can count on more money to come in, then I would just do it. Don't get in a rush and take the whole $70,000 and pay toward it. Do it in $20,000-$30,000 increments, and before you know it, it'll be gone.
And I did do that with the first half of it. Like probably every 3 weeks I paid it, and just to watch it go down with the pace. But I know exactly what you're saying. But also for my time, I know what you're saying when you lost that money. Like a word, shit happened. And it will.
We got another caller on the other line. Can you hear it? You guys are overlapping.
Yes. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
What was okay you? If you got to run for that. That's okay. I just wanted to.
Well, I hope I was able to at least give you a little, you know, clarity and kind of work through your thoughts. I think you're on the right track. Do the math, and, you know, numbers never lie. That's the beauty of it. And
they know.
You know, and if you're still working and you're able to do that, like, that's these are all good things. They're great things. And if you need any help, you know, you can find me. Go online and be happy to help you retire or make more money or both.
What's that? I know we're close, right?
Yeah.
You were going to give me a website there?
Yeah, MindyMolina.com. MindyE. Molina. MOLINA.com. And you can Google my name, Mindy Molina, and I'll come up.
Okay.
And I can also give you, I can give you my cell phone number too.
Yes.
It's 561-729-2778.
Perfect. Mindy, thank you so much.
Hey, God bless you.
I appreciate it. God is blessing you.
Amen. You guys, I'm really proud of you and your wife. Keep working hard. I appreciate you working for the government. We need all the help we can get. And
keep on
doing what you're doing. You're going to be just fine.
Great, Wendy. Thank you so much. Now we got to get our kids on board with this, and life will be even better.
Yay. Good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mindy.
Thanks for
Have
listening.
A great day.
You too. Bye.
Of course.
Well, that was a wonderful story and great, and kind of a great display of what I think a lot of people struggle with. It's like, do I pay off my mortgage or not? And some of you have really low interest rates. And Frank and I have always went back and forth about it. And who's an advisor that works with me, and you know, he doesn't like to just pay off the mortgage. He really is all about keeping the mortgage. I think he leans more that way, and where I lean toward get rid of it. And so that's that emotional side to it that is a factor, and it's a factor in all things when it comes to financial planning. You know, there is the emotional aspect of investing, of money, of life, and in, like, you know, everything from how much income do, how much do we really truly should we be spending in our household, to how much do we really need to leave to the kids, or do we need to leave anything. I'm a huge advocate for inheritance, because I believe that's something that Satan wants to rob the Christian generations of, inheritance. And so, I mean, that's what is it? The fifth commandment, right? Honor your mother and your father. I think if you really study that, there's a lesson to be learned there about inheritance and how important the family structure is financially. I would love to see the Christians get back to building an estate, okay? Having those trust funds, doing what the super wealthy do. Jesus didn't tell us to be poor. He didn't equip us to be poor. I mean, we are rich beyond all things through him. So, but I think that we need to be intelligent and wise. And there's so many lessons in the scripture about that, but that's a whole other show. Anyways, getting back on track with what I was going to talk about is the emotional side effects, right? So one of the things is denial. Now, this is the market cycle. So, and imagine the weather cycle too. Okay. So whether there's a hurricane out there, do we have a hurricane? There's whatever name, Hurricane Mindy is approaching. You know, there's that aspect of, is it going to impact me? Do I really need to put up the shutters? Do we all need to go to the basement because of a tornado or winds? But, you know, taking shelter. There is this phase of denial that we call it. And, well, when things are really good, it's euphoria. You are in this phase where, as an investor, you're overly optimistic, you're confident, you're often ignoring the risk. You forget that risk even exists. It's like everything is great. Everybody's making money. I'm going to make money. We're all going to be rich. And that's just this euphoric mindset that sometimes blinds us from the potentials of risk that are a reality. The history repeats itself, okay? So having that, identifying we're in this euphoric place where prices are rising rapidly, there's a sense of excitement and a belief that the market will just continue to go up indefinitely. And then the sense of anxiety sets in when we see that, oh, prices are starting to stabilize and we're showing signs of volatility in the market. And now we start to get a little anxious, like, well, okay, wait. Investors start to begin to feel anxious about that there's a potential of a downturn. This thing could go down. Maybe the market could go down. And this phase is, it's about uncertainty, and it's a growing awareness that all of a sudden we remember risk exists. And that makes us anxious. So we go from this euphoric phase mindset of optimism and confidence to this, whoo, wait a minute, I'm feeling a little nervous. My dreams are fading fast because there's a chance this market could go down. Maybe things aren't as great as I thought they were. And then we can go into this phase of denial, right? Like, it won't happen. It's not going to happen. Even as the signs of the market correction or a downturn, like even as those signs start to emerge, we still just refuse to acknowledge that there's the reality of the situation. We just kind of, we call it head in the sand, right? Just it's deny it, look away. And you believe that the market will recover quickly and it'll continue to just go on up because that's really what we want. So then as the market continues or begins to really decline, that's when fear takes hold. Okay, so as the market really starts to decline significantly, all of a sudden we become increasingly worried about losses, and then which leads to panic, and panic leads to doing what? Selling. We need to get out. We need to abort mission. You know, sell everything. And this phase, this emotion, this fear, often results in sharp declines in, you know, it's like fuel on the fire. Because when people go into this fear phase, that's where we call it like a panic sell-off. Everybody starts selling. And so you went from this euphoric mindset of everything's going up, invest more. Now that the market is going down, sell-off. And then despair. Okay, so then despair hits. And during this phase, you feel hopeless, you feel defeated, because all you can remember is like how high the market was, your account value. All you can see is those dollar signs that used to be on your statement, and they just continue to fall, right? They just keep getting lower and lower. And many people may actually sell off their investments and take these significant losses, and believing that the market will never recover, or just saying, I don't want to do this emotional roller coaster anymore. That's really what I hear. It's I've been through it. I lived through it. I didn't like it. I didn't like the experience. So they move to this safe, consistent, guaranteed side of financial investing. Like, I want to invest in things that I can count on. I don't want to go through retirement with this roller coaster mindset. So, but not everyone goes through that, right? So, but as we continue on this emotional cycle, there's capitulation, which is the point when investors give up, they sell their holdings, often at the lowest point of the market, and that's characterized by like high trading volumes, widespread fear, and as many attempt to cut their losses, as they say. Okay, so we see that in the market, and then we see hope. So everybody leaves the party, and now the market begins to stabilize or show signs of recovery. Investors start to, it's like the sun comes out again. Okay, the storm is past, and it's that first brink of sunshine, and there's hope. And investors start to feel a sense of hope. They cautiously reenter the market, and they're looking for opportunities to invest at lower prices, right? But they've kind of been mentally or emotionally beat up through this process. And then there's the sign of relief. And relief is when the prices do begin to rise, right? And investors feel relief, and they're finding this renewed optimism for opportunities in the market. And they start to regain their confidence in investing. And they start increasing, you know, buying again and getting back into the investment. So it's very similar to these storms that pass, that come through. This cycle of emotion can be this, you know, fear, panic, do wait till the last minute, do everything now, or versus being prepared, or that denial keeps you from going and getting the groceries that you need, putting up the shutters when you should, fueling up the gas tanks when you should, doing all the things that you're supposed to do, having flood insurance when you, and now you can't get it because there's a storm in the circumference of where you are allowed. So it's all these things, these preparations that you, because of denial and your euphoric state of mind, when everything is great, you just act like risk doesn't exist. And then it puts you in a bad position when the storm does come. And because you procrastinated or you denied the idea that you needed to plan for it. But then, you know, it cycles back. So what happens? Hope happens. Relief happens. We start new optimistic views on the market, new opportunities. People start making money again. When the optimism phase happens, now we have that buying, right? And then we start going, more investors start to participate, and there's a growing belief that the upward trend will continue. So we get back into the cycle, and we're headed right back to that euphoric phase. Greed is another possibility in that, where investors become excessively greedy, often ignoring fundamental valuations, which can lead to speculative behavior and inflated asset prices, which can set the stage for the next cycle of euphoria. So this thing just goes around and around and around. And the important thing is preparation, which takes you back to that initial phase, planning, okay? Having everything in. When you know that you have the perfect plan, that you are going to be secure no matter what threat comes your way, no matter what storm comes your way, you're financially secure. This is the greatest peace of mind that can be. And that's when you really can say, hey, I have my affairs in order. I have it together. My assets are invested in a way that I know I'm going to be able to weather every storm. And we have incredible tools and strategies that we use to do that. And like I said, I'm not from the mindset of just following this emotional cycle. I like mathematical algorithms and formulas that show us how the market is going to trend upward or downward. And if it's going down, we want to step aside and wait for it to bottom out and then get back in. So hopefully you are prepared to weather any financial storm. This is the Mindy Molina Show. I really, truly appreciate you listening. I hope you are blessed today and tomorrow and all the days. And that if you need anything, that you will call me or go online at MindyMolina.com. Come in, visit, have a call with me. We'd love to see you. Thanks and be blessed. And remember, God loves you and there's nothing anyone can do about it. Thanks for listening. Join us next week. And remember, if you have any concerns about your financial picture, please reach out to us at 561-729-2778. There's a no obligation consultation. All you have to do is text or call 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us on our website at www.mindymolina.com. Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance has been protecting the retirement of families for 15 years. Information provided by Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance and or its affiliates are for informational purposes only and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice, and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. Get your financial report at 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us at www.mindymolina.com.
Come on, we've come to magnify the Lord and give him some glory. Want you to help me sing this song. Come on, lift up and say, if it happens.